This is an encore presentation of We the People on KCNR.
The views and opinions of shows on KCNR are those of the hosts, guests, and callers only, and do not necessarily reflect those of the staff, management, or advertisers of KCNR Radio.
Good afternoon, and welcome to another episode of We the People Radio. My name is Aaron Ryan.
And I'm Bill Cundiff.
Well, Bill.
What are we doing today, Aaron?
I think today's going to be really fun.
I think it is, too. Looking forward to it.
Yeah, we've been speed reading, actually. We were speed reading the wrong book, though. It was one of his books, but we were speed reading the wrong book for today, so we had to speed read the second book. Our guest is A.J. Rice. He's an American publicist and the undisputed GOAT. Greatest of all time, of conservative public relations. He's a columnist, a humorist, and impresario. Officially, Rice serves as president and CEO of Publius PR, editor-in-chief of the Publius National Post on Substack. He's got a lot of really good stuff on there, too, by the way. And author of the number one Amazon bestseller, The Woking Dead, How Society's Vogue Virus Destroys Our Culture. And that's the one that I was way into. It really a good book. It's all the stuff we kind of know, but somebody finally put it in a book. He's a brand manager, a star whisperer, media influencer, and literary agent who has produced, promoted, or represented Laura Ingraham, Judge Jeanine Pirro, Donald Trump Jr., Monica Crowley, Congressman Marjorie Taylor Greene, Senator Marsha Blackburn, Vivek Ramaswamy, Congresswoman Tulsi Gabbard. He's got like all the people from the new administration, which will be fun, and a whole bunch of other people that I will probably tell you about later. But I'd like to get to him, because we're pushed for time. We only have him as a hostage for an hour. Can you imagine?
Yeah, that's going to fly by.
Uh-huh. So, AJ, where would you like to start? Because your album, let's see, it's the White Privilege album, which just has a great title, by the way.
I just can't help myself. Great to be here, guys. I appreciate that. The Woking Dead is Volume 1. Came out in 2022. And it really deals with the end of the Trump first term and into the Biden second term. And pretty devastating stuff in that first year of the Biden administration, which, you know, we kind of have seen now unfold that we're now going to have to fix. But the White Privilege album is a sequel to that. And you know, I write these things as almost like snapshots in time, where I am. Some of the stuff is evergreen. Some of the stuff's timeless. But where I'm sort of cataloging, especially as it relates to wokeism and globalism, cataloging, you know, what we are going through. So it's a collection of vignettes. The first one was massive. It was like 98 vignettes. The new one, which came out in September, the White Privilege album, is about 82. But when you're talking about wokeism, you're talking about something that, you know, sometimes for some people is hard to nail to the wall, kind of like Jell-O. There's lots of flavors, right? It's like the 31 flavors. But with the White Privilege album, while I was promoting The Woking Dead in 2022, it dawned on me that some of these flavors are more toxic than others. So the racial element of wokeism, the racial element of DEI, ESG, of political correctness, of cancel culture. I try to drill down in the White Privilege album a little more on just that lane. And I try to sort of package it and do it in a fun way, in a humorous way. Although some of this stuff is serious stuff, the way I sort of write and handle it is to, you know, dunk on the leftists and try to make people laugh while they're sort of watching a train derail.
Yeah, and you really can't miss that. I really liked in part of the description of the book, it says the least talented people in American society have been working overtime for decades, dividing citizens along differences they think they can exploit. And I mean, the laziest tactic proven to be the most effective is unleashing a battalion of racial grievance hustlers in the media, academia, entertainment, and politics. And if we stop fighting about our differences and start unifying on what we have in common, they will lose the power to divide us permanently. And honestly, that's like the last, that was ourselves the Obama term into the Bidens, and now we're finally kind of seeing that, the part where everybody looks around and goes, hey, wait a minute, these guys are working us.
Well, yeah, I think we started to see this when Obama took office. I mean, we heard it time and time again that he was a race baiter. I mean, he really divided the country racially when he was supposed to bring it all together, and he did exactly the opposite. And then Biden kind of picked up where that left off. I mean, we've all known this has been going on. I particularly like the story you told of the interview with Morgan Freeman. I mean, that that was pretty telling. Why don't you share that with us?
Sure. Well, look, you got to remember, too, guys, the first embers of this predate even Obama. I mean, you know, every Republican since the Florida recount has been called a racist in one capacity or another,
that's
even
true.
The ones that are not even our favorites. You know, I mean, even McCain and Romney were called it to some degree. George W. Bush had to deal with stuff all day long. There was that James Byrd ad where, you know, Bush was going to drag black people behind a truck. I don't know whether you guys remember that.
I forgot that. You're right.
So, I mean, look, you got to remember. So Obama comes along and, you know, I don't know whether you recall this, but we were supposed to, when he got elected, we were supposed to enter this post-racial America.
Oh, yes. Uh-huh. Oh, we do remember.
The declaration made, PBS and NPR and New York Times and all the other sort of low IQ journalists, that we were going to move beyond race, right? And, you know, he won the Electoral College vote. He won the popular vote, really against two stiffs. Two stiffs that were afraid to land punches on them because they themselves were afraid to be called names.
Yep.
You can probably tell from my book, you can hear it, I'm from Philadelphia. I'm not afraid of any of this. I grew up on the Philadelphia playgrounds with the Philadelphia sports teams. I have no problem dunking on black, white, purple people anytime, any place. It doesn't matter to me because I grew up in the, quote, neighborhood. The neighborhood Obama was talking about in Pittsburgh when he was pushing Kamala. We can get into that later. So Obama comes along, and it didn't take long. You know, the Cambridge police acted stupidly. If I had a son, he would look like Trayvon, right?
Oh, yeah.
Antifa's, you know, Occupy Wall Street, Antifa, Black Lives Matter. He midwifed them all into existence. And, you know, if you're wondering about some of these college campuses and why they explode with anti-Semitic intifadas, you know, some of Obama's teachers, some of his sort of intellectual sort of mentors, not just Frank Marshall Davis, but people like Rashid Khalidi, who, lo and behold, I hadn't seen his name in forever, this weekend, New York Post puts an image up where Joe Biden is up in the whitest neighborhood in America, Nantucket, I believe, or Martha's Vineyard, one of them. right. And he's carrying around Rashid Khalidi's book, which is basically, get the Jews, the hell with the Jews, get the Jews out of here. The Holocaust didn't happen, and even if it did, we're going to do another one. I mean, this is one of Obama's guys.
Wow.
I was really kind of surprised that he was carrying that around. That
was like carrying around Mein Kampf. Oh, a little light reading, guys. A little light reading there in the vineyard.
Yeah.
There's nothing like hunting Jews for Thanksgiving, right?
Very casual. Very casual. Very subtle.
Right. So, but this is the soup Obama came out of. And he's a Gen X guy. And, you know, I hate to say this, I know some of the younger people, and I'm a millennial, they don't like to hear this, but, you know, the boomers, for whatever reason, you know, you might not like them for this reason or that reason, or they're not cool enough for you, but the reality is the boomers still have a direct line, because it was their parents, to a group of people that liberated Europe, that liberated the concentration camps, that saw them, that saw the aftermath. So it's not, you know, two, three, four generations removed.
True.
It's not a theoretical extrapolation. somewhere in the 80s and into the 90s, when Obama was going to school and a lot of the Gen Xers were going to school, college in particular, this all became theoretical. Well, maybe the Holocaust happened. Man, it might have been a stage play that Israel put on. I mean, I don't know. Right? I don't know whether we should believe it. And even if it did, they're doing it to all the other terrorists that they live, that they're surrounded by now. So this is where we've gone in academia. This is due to a lot of things, not just political correctness and the sort of rise of the racial grievances in the humanities department. The black studies and the purple studies and the yellow studies and the red studies and the, you know, underwater lesbian basket weaving studies and everything else. Right? So it all became theoretical, and they're now the professors, people Obama's age.
Yeah.
So if you wonder why Columbia is exploding and UCLA is exploding and some of these other things because of October 7th, that's why. That's why. So Obama was not some great uniter. Not some great uniter. If anything, he used his platform to fundraise for his library.
Yep.
Didn't do squat for black people. You know, and I think some African Americans, they don't have amnesia. I think they remember that.
Is he still promoting himself as the great? Is that still a thing, or did we all see through that?
Well, just remember, he was the second black president, because the first black president was a chubby white guy from Arkansas. So, you know, but my I guess my point is, he'll play the race card when he wants to.
Yeah.
For sure. But he midwifed a lot of the chaos that came, you know, on his way out. You know, I mean, the place was burning. Ferguson and Baltimore, these places were burning in his second term. ISIS was putting people in cages on beaches and lighting them on fire, cutting heads off, video choreographed decapitations.
Yep.
The border was kids in cages, the border's wide open. This is all Obama. You know, he's got stuff to do, guys. He's got to hang out with Jay-Z and Beyonce in the Situation Room. You have to understand that. Right? He's got to play basketball with LeBron and Jeff Flake. Right? That's what he has to do.
Yeah.
So he doesn't have time for this ISIS stuff and this Black Lives Matter garbage. Black Lives Matter's in a parking garage in Dallas, opening fire down on a parade, shooting cops. So I think they killed like five. You know, shrug your shoulders. They had it coming. So if you wonder why you got Trump the first time, I mean, it's like a white blood cells flying towards an infection. And wokeism, which is powered by, you know, the media, academia, Hollywood, you know, is just the latest iteration of a very, very nefarious offshoot of regular Marxism called cultural Marxism. It came from a guy named Antonio Gramsci, who basically said you can't get the West by overthrowing them the traditional way. You're not going to get a Marxist revolution. As long as the middle class exists, see, now you guys, now you know why they have to destroy the middle class.
Yeah.
As long as the middle class exists, you're never going to hang the capitalist with the rope he manufactured. Not going to happen. You're not going to get a bunch of lumberjacks and oyster fishermen and corn and coal and cattle people to storm the White House and burn it down. Not going to happen. You're not going to get it. So you got to capture them another way, and that's through culture capture, right? Gramsci basically said that the hegemony of the culture is how you get them, but you got to be patient. You have to do the long march. You begin with Broadway. You begin with the silent picture industry. You begin with early radio and the newspaper business, and then you do the long march, and here we are. Here we are, and there's been some things that they weren't counting on. You know, there has been, and they haven't been able to do it. It's not like flipping a light switch. You've got to do this over time, you know, through the Cold War, through the War on Terror nonsense, all the way up till today.
I just cannot believe that people have actually fallen for all of this for as long as they did. You know, it always seemed like something where, I don't know, everybody would just be smarter than that, but that really has absolutely not been the case. I don't know. I'm constantly shocked. Let's take a really quick break and then come back. Our guest is A.J. Rice. The book we're discussing is The White Privilege Album, Bringing Racial Harmony to Very Fine People on Both Sides. You're listening to We the People. You can find us at wethepeopleradio.us.
Jones's Fort Gun Shop, serving Shasta County for over 50 years. It's a new year and we're very excited about the new leadership for our nation. Jones's Fort is offering the brand new Ruger LCP Max 380 at only $349 and the new Ruger Max 9 at just $395. Jones's Fort, serving all your firearm needs since 1962. You can find us at 1600 East Cypress Avenue or just give us a call, 530-222-3223.
Alan Gordon, Coachmaster Collision. Although Coachmaster is recognized as the authority and specialist in frame and suspension, we are primarily your auto body and truck collision repair center. This includes all vehicles, Lexus, Honda, or pickup trucks. Our technicians are highly trained and have the most advanced equipment to ensure a complete and quality repair. With our knowledge and the insurance claim process, all we need is your claim number to handle your claim. Coachmaster has a great working relationship with all insurance companies. This ensures a complete repair with quality parts and a delay-free process. At Coachmaster, in our 50 years in business, we've experienced almost every situation imaginable in a claim. This experience and personal dedication to the repair of your vehicle sets Coachmaster apart from all other choices. And yes, if we can't fix it, no one can.
Learn more online at CoachmasterAutobody.com.
Tracy Morgan.
I suffered some terrible injuries, you know.
Live.
And after I came out the coma, I was blind for a week. And where I come from, you don't want to be blind for a second. One day, my uncle was trying to walk out with my heart monitor. I said, Michael, where you going with my heart machine? Try to sell it to another hospital.
February 6th, Wind River Resort and Casino. Get tickets now at WindRiver.com or call 1-800-280-UWIN. Must be 21.
There was a time the when DEI it felt like we were done.
It totally felt like
DEI
we were done.
DEI and all this wokeism stuff was on a rolling train that didn't look like we were going to be able to stop it. And I think, AJ, I don't know, maybe you can back me up on this, but I think if nothing else, we've at least stopped the train. Do you think we're going to turn this thing around?
Sure. Here's the thing, though. Like I was discussing in the last segment, you know, cultural Marxism is patient.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
They're like termites. You can't see them, but they're there. You can certainly treat them. You can try to fumigate the house. That's what Trump's about to do with, you know, Cash Patel and a lot of other people. But, you know, this is generations of people being captured. So this isn't just one.
Right.
A lot of it comes, you know, from the levers of culture. So, you know, and look, they've even tried to creep into churches. I mean, we've got woke Jesus and the transgender Jesus stuff going on in England and stuff. Like crazy stuff.
Yeah.
Stuff that I'm working on now for volume three. But but here's what I would say. The American people have a unique ability to deliver characters, not perfect characters, not perfect people. There was only one perfect person, if you believe in those things. You know, and certainly not, and for those conservatives or those Republicans that, you know, I like Trump's policies, but I don't like him, and, you know, that's kind of, you guys have heard it all, right?
Sure.
They're trying to apply a purity test, you know, and if you look at history, purity tests don't really work out. Part of the Democrats' problem is that they now apply a purity test to their own people. This is a party that, during the Obama years, drove Joe Lieberman from their party. And in recent history here, have driven people like Elon Musk, Tulsi Gabbard, who's our client, RFK Jr., who's our client, who's the heir. I mean, if this was Game of Thrones, he'd be the king of the Kennedys. He's the oldest male heir. Okay? Because John Jr. is dead. He died in a car crash, or a plane crash.
Plane crash.
Right?
Yeah.
So, you know, people like Naomi Wolf, driven from, you know. Guys, Joe Rogan endorsed Bernie Sanders in 2016. So what have you been doing, Democrats, what have you been doing to lose these people? Why are the map of California in particular, you know, up where you guys are is one thing, but why is the blue map of California shrinking? Why are people going into the voting booth in AOC's district and voting for Trump? What did you do? What are you doing? What have you been, since the OG came down the golden escalator, what have you been doing? You have been in a freak out, a full state of panic. Domestically, you have the wokeism. I talk about the four tyrannies. Wokeism's the cultural one. Then you've got the sort of judicial one. And, you know, that's the FBI run amok, the CIA run amok, DOJ. These state courts, these Soros prosecutors, doing whatever the hell they want, not being checked, right? And then you've got Bidenomics not exactly saving the country's economy.
What?
Bidenflation, $6 eggs, gas prices. The Green New Deal is more important than the coal miners' union, more important than the Teamsters, more important than the UAW, right? So, you know, and then obviously globalism is your sort of foreign policy tyranny. And that involves all kinds of things, you know. Countries in NATO not paying their fair share, letting China eat our lunch, you know. And you know, some of that involves the sort of medical tyranny of what was COVID.
Yeah.
I mean, COVID to me looks like, oh, my gosh, we're losing a trade war. From China, last time China got hit with tariffs, they put a bunch of people on airplanes. You know,
yeah,
they were infected by something that escaped Dr. Fauci's underwear drawer. So, you know, but look, guys, here's what you have to understand: they are losing Democrats, they are losing independents. Like if Trump was like a general manager of a baseball team, think about this, or the owner. Right? A good one. Not like a Jerry Jones. Right? But if he was like George Steinbrenner, right, when he was alive with the Yankees.
Yeah.
Can you imagine making a trade for your poor Oakland Athletics or the Tampa Bay Rays or some, you know, small market team, the poor Padres or the poor, you know, Milwaukee Brewers or whatever, and you say to him, all right, I'm going to give you Liz Cheney, Adam Kinzinger.
Ooh, hard pass. Right?
Yeah, I'm going to give you Bill Kristol on all fours. I'm going to give you Jonah Goldberg and the rest of these Never Trumpers, and you know, and a bag of beans. And then you're going to give me Elon, RFK Jr., Naomi Wolf, Tulsi Gabbard. Can you imagine? Talk about fleecing the Democrats.
Yeah, yeah,
and
it's
they
true.
Ran around here, guys. I never thought of. And look, I was Laura Ingraham's executive producer on radio from 2005 to 2010. We might have even been on this station once upon a time. I don't know.
Probably were.
Might have been. Yeah. So if there's anyone out there in the audience, Laura's sitting there talking to Lee and AJ, Matt and AJ. I was one of her sidekicks, right? And I was her executive producer. And now, ironically, the boss has me on her TV show and interviews me. It's always fun to be interviewed by your old boss.
It's funny. I just saw that the other day, and I wondered if that was weird.
No. Her and Monica Crowley are like my big sisters, because I was the producer for both of them back when I was a puppy, a wee lad. But, you know, I mean, she stood on stage in a national debate, internationally televised debate, and said, I stand here proudly with the endorsements of the Cheney family. And I've got this letter, and it's filled with Romney people, McCain people, you know, some backbenchers from the Bush administrations, and, you know, a couple janitors from the Reagan White House. And they were okay with that. They were proud with that. And what she did there was pretty much prove every conspiracy theory, you know. And I don't know everyone that's on your station, but, you know, there's probably some people that are still considered controversial. Everything that, like, Steve Bannon says and Tucker says and Jones. Oh, no, Jones could never be right. You know, the reality is that, like, all, and look, some of these people are wrong sometimes. But I don't think it's a stretch to say, and I'm here, guys. I've been in Washington, D.C. for 20 years, and I can tell you, you know, her getting up there was like validation that, you know, there really is a uniparty. There really is a swamp. There really is an establishment, you know? So, and that they're all in league with each other. And that they're trying to protect their turf. And, you know, Trump's rolling with Tulsi, and she's rolling with Liz Cheney. I mean, who do you want to roll with?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I don't even think they were impressed by that. I mean, they realized they got a bottom of the barrel pick.
Well, I will say,
Hail Mary.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, you know, Raggedy Ann there.
Oh yeah.
NBC. You know, the former press secretary.
Circle
Raggedy
back.
Ann.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, she's, you know, I mean, look, a broken clock, right? But she made an astute point that, you know, liberals and, you know, whether it's the New York Times or MSNBC or their foot soldiers in between, they were really proud to have, you know, Liz Cheney and, you know, some of the Never Trumpers throw in with them and campaign with them. But they didn't bother talking to their own base.
Right? They were impressed by it, but their guys were not.
I mean, shouldn't you be talking to, you know, the Plumbers Union of Philadelphia before talking to Liz Cheney, who lost her reelection bid by like 47%?
Yeah.
But obviously, they don't have a constituency, dummies. In fact, their only constituency are you goofballs on MSNBC.
Well, it's interesting. Yeah, and then they're being relegated to the dustbin of history.
What's her name? Jen Psaki. That's Raggedy Ann.
Yeah. Circle back, Jen. Yeah, all these guys, they have overplayed it. But, you know, that's kind of a hallmark of the left. They get a little bit of steam, and then if you just sort of let them go, I see it on the environmental side a lot.
Sure.
They always go too far. And blow themselves up.
Well, you know, a lot of, you know, our different conservative friends, some known, some not known, some greats and some near greats. They were, you know, during the Obama years, I was sitting next to Ingram and Crowley, and, you know, Andrew Breitbart was alive. He was kind of a mentor to me during those years. And, you know, I kept telling people, look, this Obama situation here, this is a unique phenomenon. There's not some apple orchard out there with a bunch of Obamas growing in it.
Yeah.
They're not going to be able to fake this. All right? He showed up at the exact right time. George W. Bush, the 2008 financial collapse, Hank Paulson, the bailouts, the TARP 1 and the TARP 2 and the TARP 45 and then the, you know. Mm-hmm. He showed up at this unique moment where he was able to knock the Clintons out in a primary. And then he was up against Beavis there, John McCain, God bless him.
Yeah.
You know, the heroes that were captured, the heroes that weren't captured. You know, and he didn't really stand a chance. He wouldn't take it to him. He wouldn't bring up any Obama's radical associations. You know.
No, they ran an absolutely gloves-off campaign, which was
right. The
100% wrong move there.
Right, but what I told them was, look, this is all they got. And if you guys really study it, there's been shenanigans involved in every single Democrat nominating process since Obama left. Let me give you just a brief history of time. In the convention in 16, we know this because Donna Brazile told us in her book, Debbie Wasserman Schultz and Hillary Clinton rigged that convention against Bernie Sanders, Joe Rogan's guy.
That's right.
Okay? With the superdelegates. To keep them off the floor, to keep a floor fight from happening, Bernie had a crap load of delegates, guys. It wasn't like in 2020. He had a ton. He was beating her all over the place. And they had to do a little three-card Monty there to make sure she was safe. If you fast forward to 2020, you got all these, the Barnum and Bailey circus is out there. And at some point, Jim Clyburn, right after Iowa and New Hampshire, they decided when the South Carolina primary happened that they were going to tell everyone to get out of the race. And they all started jumping. Crazy-eyed Corey and Pocahontas and Pete Buttigieg and Amy Klobuchar, they all jump out of the race so that it cleared a pathway for Biden to start to win primaries. And then they just took him to Delaware, and they've got the extension cord out. They plugged him into the wall. And, he supposedly got 81 million votes from the base.
Yeah.
Right? So fast forward to this time. Here we go again. Biden decided to debate Trump early. Can you imagine in the MCU multiverse, guys? Right? You were talking about the Deadpool movie and the Spider-Man movie. In a parallel dimension, the Democrats actually allow RFK Jr. to debate Biden in a primary way earlier than even the Trump debate. And I know Bobby. He would have knocked him out way earlier. So Biden might not even have won his own primary, against RFK Jr. We don't know. But they hit him. They hit him from that. They protected him there. They couldn't protect him from Trump. And, Trump went in there and shattered his glass jaw. Next thing you know, the greatest political mastermind known to in America today, George Clooney, writes an op-ed in the New York Times, and they yank him. They do a soft coup. They play musical chairs, and then the second most unlikable woman in history, maybe the first now, becomes the nominee.
Yeah.
They go shopping for a white guy. They go to Total Wine, and they go to the Chardonnay aisle, and they find a fruity, crisp white with stainless steel, no oak aging or anything. But they put Tim Walton
with the rubbery doughy hands.
It was track of myself up now.
It was the way
thing. It was just so bizarre that they picked him.
It's like, wait a second, is this real? You guys are just fooling with this, right?
So there you go. But that, I'm like laughing. Trying to be serious, I can't get through my own jokes. Look, they had three nominating processes here that all look like a rigged hot potato of nonsense.
Yeah.
So like I told my friends many many years ago, that once this Obama's gone, they're going to have to do-si-do the voters to get them to believe that they're authentic.
Yeah.
Didn't work this time.
No. Well, it's
that's what the American people are always looking at, too, guys. And it's even when the Democrats win. Enough independents believe that whoever it is, whether it's the peanut farmer or Bill Clinton or whoever it is, that there's a level of authenticity and meritocracy involved. And people can smell a phony. There's this term in gangster rap. It's called a studio gangster. All right? Most of the African Americans, Latin Americans, when they're looking at her, even Indian Americans, she supposedly can make a great curry. Even the Indian Americans voted for Trump against her, and probably because she looks like some sort of composite created in some DEI lab, and they put her out there to try to make her authentic. She's been failing upward her whole life. You guys had to deal with her there longer than America has.
God, yes. Well, the thing is, she. I remember I attended a thing 10 years ago, longer. With the sheriff, our county sheriff, and it was some big statewide law enforcement thing. And she was the the attorney general, and she's up there talking, and I really didn't know anything about her. I'm not from California. I just live here now. And I always like to make that distinction. Bill is from here, just so we can be clear. Anyway, she was talking, and I looked over at him, and I said, "Do you guys like this lady?" He looked at me, and he goes, "Nobody likes her." They all think she's an idiot. I go, "Why is everyone sitting here?" And they're like, "Because we have to." And I thought, oh, okay. So I figured her, you know, career was capped out at that point.
She had the Barbara Boxer Senate seat. You'll have to just remind me and remind the audience. She did not exactly run away with that primary, right? The Democrat primary. Right.
No, and Barbara Boxer was terrible, only to be, you know, we have a bad history there.
Yeah, but she wasn't some consensus runaway pick to replace her.
No.
Right.
No, and that's been kind of the theme of the whole thing. It was fascinating. Even when they asked people, you know, if you kind of watched all the wide ranging man on the street interviews, you know, the funny ones, the serious ones, you know, why do you like her? And even the people who said they liked her didn't know why. I mean, they had nothing. There was nothing that stood out. There was no policy. It's like, oh dear, this is bad. I don't know. My contention is they put Waltz with her because they knew she was going to implode, and they needed somebody who had no political future. So they found him. They didn't want to burn one of their good guys.
They threw him on a landmine.
Yeah, right. Pretty much. They're like, hey, do you want to run for VP? He's like, sure.
Hey, yeah. You mentioned that debate with Trump. Whose decision do you think that was to even have that debate? He was in no condition to debate anybody. I mean, he didn't have the most brilliant campaign managers, but do you think that came from his campaign, or do you think the decision to do that was pressure from above?
He was asked about it. Problem is, he was asked about it, and it was early. It was early. It was an early debate. You know, it wasn't like the old days where they do, you know, one in August, one in September, one in October. And, you know, he was asked about it by a journalist, and then they tweeted it that he, you know, they were eager to go. They really, they're totally delusional. They were, like, eager to get out there to debate Trump.
Wow.
And, you know.
I always thought that was probably fake, that we just believed that. They really said that, huh?
Yeah, no, they walked into a wood chipper. It was ridiculous.
Yeah.
So,
they really
did. And that's why, you know, they were able to replace her. My whole point was, I mean, if he had to debate Bobby earlier than that, he might have been gone sooner.
Oh, that's true. That's true. They could have, without a real process, the American public doesn't really get to see who they're dealing with. Although from a policy standpoint, it was fairly clear. I mean, I'm not really sure who was really missing the message on that. But let's take a really quick break. We'll come back with our guest AJ Rice. He is the author of a terrific book called The White Privilege Album. You'll like it. And The Woking Dead, you'll like that too, actually. That's the one I've actually read, and you'll love that one. We'll be right back. You're listening to We the People, and you can find us at wethepeopleradio.us.
I'm Tracy Edwards, CEO of the Reading Rancheria. Giving back to our local community is a tradition that is firmly rooted in our history. It is with great honor and pride that we have been able to support several amazing local businesses like these over the years.
Thanks to the Reading Rancheria for their support of the Kiwanis Festadam Club Food for Kids program. We send 185 bags of food home every Friday. They're instrumental in helping us.
Reading Rancheria, proud to play our part.
This Hawaiian mini vacation is brought to your radio by Maui Bob's Office Cleaning. So what does professional office cleaning have to do with relaxing in a tropical paradise? Frankly, nothing. But Maui Bob and the crew want to remind you to be sure to take the time for what's important in this workaday world. Family, friends, and yes, even yourself. And if their professional office cleaning services can help you make that time, give them a call at 221-5868. This Hawaiian mini vacation was brought to your radio by Maui Bob's Office Cleaning, 221-5868.
I'm Tracy Edwards, CEO of the Redding Rancheria. Giving back to our local community is a tradition that is firmly rooted in our history.
Thank you, Redding Rancheria, for supporting Tree of Life International Charter School. Gracias por todo su apoyo.
Thank you, Redding Rancheria.
The Shasta Lake Chamber of Commerce wants to thank the Redding Rancheria. They have sponsored our Friday night in the park for more than 18 years, and we really appreciate it.
Redding Rancheria, proud to play our part.
So, AJ, I don't know what the deal is. Maybe it's because you're in Philadelphia. I feel this overwhelming urge to play country songs today. I just realized I was on kind of a weird theme.
Okay. AJ, how much?
We're up here in rural Northern California where we do what we want.
How much?
Well, wait a minute. Isn't Levin on your station?
Yeah, he probably. Yeah, I think he is.
Yeah, there you go. So he's from the next neighborhood over.
Well, and we're like 2.5 hours north of Sacramento.
In Philadelphia. Yeah.
Yeah, right next to you. All right, sorry.
Yeah, I'm from the Northeast. He's from North Philly. He's actually from the same neighborhood that Bibi Netanyahu spent a lot of time in, grew up in for a certain when he was in the United States.
Oh, no kidding.
Yeah, Jewish neighborhood.
See, I grew up in West Hartford in a big-time Jewish neighborhood.
Jesse Waters is kind of from that same general area. And Michelle Malkin.
Whatever happened to her?
I think she went into self-imposed retirement.
Oh, I think. That's funny. I haven't heard of her in a long time.
She told me she might have had a health issue or something, but she was amazing. We loved her.
Yeah.
And I worked with her over the years. I haven't seen her in a while.
So how much influence do you think Pelosi had in ousting Biden? Because according to her, she had absolutely nothing to do with it, which I think is another colossal lie.
No, it was definitely Obama, Pelosi, and Schumer and money people. And they knew they needed some sort of, you know, torpedo in the water. And I read a story the other day that Clooney's ticked off that he was tricked into, you know, becoming a political mastermind there in the New York Times. Franz Ferdinand Shooter. But these are dummies, you know.
Yeah.
They're dummies. They're all – Obama's trying to do his best to try to still run things there, you know, as a puppet master. That's why he keeps the house in D.C. Anytime an ex-president doesn't leave, you know, you got a problem.
Yeah. Well, I think he's toast along with the rest of them.
Well, they all
look, guys, you have like 1,000 counties that voted for him twice and voted for Trump 3 times.
Yeah.
Or at least 2 times. So the Obama coalition is dead.
Yeah.
And look, the White Privilege album kind of predicts some of what has gone on here. And that is that eventually people of all shapes and sizes and colors, you know, all from the Benetton ads, all from the sushi menu of, you know, how the left tries to put us into little identity boxes, that they're eventually going to say, you know what, we all kind of want the same thing. Stop trying to put us into, you know, the different Crayola 64 box colors. Stop talking down to us.
Yeah.
And if you look at the subtitle of my book, Bringing Racial Harmony to Very Fine People on Both Sides, obviously I'm trolling the left, but, you know, the Very Fine People hoax, that was kind of the foundational lie from the Charlottesville situation where, you know, they took Trump out of context and it became this sort of, you know, proof that he was Hitler and he was a Klansman and he was, you know,
right,
you know, white supremacist. But who's really bringing racial harmony to Very Fine People? And I know listening right now out there, there's tons of very fine people in this audience. I just want to give a shout out to them. But, you know, there were two blue walls that went down, guys. Yeah, the one that everyone talked about up there with Michigan, Wisconsin, and Pennsylvania. The second blue wall ran from El Paso, Texas, down to Brownsville, Texas. And they were counties along the Texas-Mexico border that have been voting Democrat for decades. They're not exactly filled with Scandinavians, guys.
Right.
Okay? They all flipped to Trump. That's the second blue wall. How did Trump get the Muslims in Michigan and the Jews in Pennsylvania to both vote for him?
How about the Amish?
How did he do it?
He got the Amish to vote. I mean, forget who they voted for, but the Amish don't even vote, typically.
Listen to me. He won the Amish vote in Pennsylvania. He won the Indian vote, both types of Indians, not just, you know, Indians like Cash Patel and Vivek, but Native Americans. Right? Not the Cleveland Indians, they're the Guardians now. But Native American votes. He's winning the Amish. He won the Gula. People don't even know it. What's the Gula?
Yeah, what is
the
Gula?
Well, it's this African tribal people in the low country of the Carolinas and Georgia. They are black, very conservative people. Okay? So there's, we're talking about Mike. So yeah, he won the big tribes. Right? Jews and Muslims and Latin Americans and African Americans, he peeled off as more than the most of anyone since Reagan. But there was just this gigantic, you know, multi-ethnic working class coalition that was put together of all shapes and sizes and incomes because they don't want globalism. They don't want wokeism. It was a rejection. This was a woke Waterloo moment. And thankfully, because of Elon and Peter Thiel and a few other people from Silicon Valley, a lot of the tech bros either stayed out of it, like Zuckerberg, or they threw in with Trump because Elon did the biggest digital jailbreak in history when he bought Twitter and restored everyone's account so that information could flow again. Zuckerberg, I guess, was the last dummy to find out that, you know, the Department of Justice lies to people. He did his big mea culpa to Joe Rogan. He sent that letter to Jim Jordan. Hey, they told me the Hunter Biden, you know, Anthony Blinken and the Cheneys told me that the Hunter Biden laptop was real. I mean, and, you know, Zuckerberg bought it. Plus, you got to remember, guys, these tech bros, you know, they are, you know, they're not exactly Kobe Bryant, right? They're not exactly Tom Brady. So they are very competitive with each other. They're kind of beta, you know. Had their first girlfriend when they were 27.
Yeah.
But they are very competitive with each other, and Elon has been relentless in making wokeism, and specifically DEI, uncool. Uncool. And look, Vivek comes from that tech world. J.D. Vance comes from that tech world. So you see, and you know, Washington is scared. I can tell you right now, I've seen these pieces popping up in all these places that none of your audience should ever go to. Right? Axios, Politico, Axios, right?
Those are that is where you go. Whenever it's all hitting the fan, go there. Don't go to your own media. You already know what you think.
Pieces.
Yeah.
Scared. What if the tech companies all? What if, you know, because Zuckerberg went to Mar-a-Lago last week. What if the tech bros all throw in with Trump?
Right.
They'll be like the oligarchs around Putin. That's what they're trying to say, that they're the oligarchs now. Now they're the oligarchs around Putin. The Trump
really.
Is Putin and the,
oh
yeah,
God.
The Trump is Putin and the tech bros, you know, who left their parents' basement when they invented something when they were 35, that they're all the oligarchs. They're Russian oligarchs. They're the inheritors. It's just insane. They can't think of anything else.
They're so scared.
We have to have some major conspiracy of some sort. Russia already played itself out. Although I will say, by way of apology to the country, California felt the need to put Adam Schiff in the Senate. What in the ever-loving hell?
Oy.
Yeah. Things we can't explain.
Well, just be prepared for Schiff to get his hair cut by Cruz and Rand Paul and Mike Lee and Josh Hawley. He's not just going to be able to sit up there in Tuberville. I mean, somebody,
no.
You know, he never had a chance. He never had to debate, you know, Senator Kennedy from Louisiana.
Oh, my God, I love that guy.
Ready.
He is my favorite.
Better be ready. You know, so, I mean, there's nothing we can do. I mean, Steve Garvey would have been great. But California, unfortunately, you know, as far as winning statewide elections, it doesn't look like it's going to happen.
Although, flipping 10 counties in California.
Well, that's great.
Yeah,
that's great.
With the climate that we have had.
It could be possible in the future if the Democrats made a fatal mistake. They were worried that African Americans were going to leave their party, so they went about a 25-year plan to replace. Talk about replacement theory. Yeah, here's the real replacement theory. Here's the real replacement theory. The real replacement theory is the Democrats thinking they can replace black people with brown people. So what did they do? They imported millions of Catholic people that never have abortions and never get divorced, that all just escaped some Marxist dump. They all just escaped some Marxist dump and then expected them to, you know, think Maxine Waters was a genius. I don't think so.
Yeah, unlikely. Yeah, it's kind of funny, and the other thing too is when not that I'm a, you know, fan of open border, but they did import a lot of people who have been just jacked up by their own government and controlled forever, and you bring them here, and it's like, all right, now we're going to control you. They're like, I don't think so.
Yeah, well, look, and just like a white soccer mom in suburban Washington, you know, you think the Arab Americans and devout Jewish people and Catholic Latin American people, Hispanics, you think they want Gary and Bill in their daughter's bathroom? I don't think so.
Yeah, highly unlikely.
And that's a huge mistake that they have made, and it looks like they're going to double down on that because we're now going to have a fight about bathrooms on Capitol Hill, I guess. And they're doubling down on some of the trans mafia wokeism, which is good for the Republican Party because
absolutely.
The Democrats are bleeding constituencies because of it, and it'll be good for me too because maybe I can write a third book about it.
It should be a wealth of terrific information, I would think. How'd you get into all this anyway?
Well, I mean, like I said, I've been in the game. You know, I helped a Republican congressman from outside of Philadelphia win. In 2004, came to D.C., got shacked up with Ingram, first as an intern, then as an assistant, then as an associate producer, then as an executive producer, and now I'm her guest. No, she gave me a blurb for the first book. So that's kind of how. I mean, I've kind of had to make my way, sort of invent my jobs as I go along. I mean, my background was in English literature. So, and then some political science. I would say 9/11 kind of altered my college curriculum a little bit. And then I've just been sort of building along the way. But I will tell you, Trump showing up was a huge boon for Publius PR because that's my day job. We put people on shows like this. It's not usually me. I'm usually behind the curtain.
Well, I started reading a bunch of your stuff, and I'm like, I got to get that guy on here. He's our kind of guy. And then I started reading your list of people. I'm like, and his guys are our guys.
Yeah.
We need to be special friends.
Well, look, half the cabinet are our people.
I know.
It's really,
it's a really sweet list.
Yeah, we're running out of clients now, so I'm gonna have to go back and get Ingram some coffee for a living.
Oh my gosh, AJ, we have to escape. The news is gonna cut us off, and I gotta play Dude right. Looks Like a Lady just to cap this off.
Hit it.
AJ Rice has been our guest. You're listening to We the People.
On,
we'll be right back.
Thank you.
K243CT Redding.
The news from Town Hall is brought to you on KCNR Shasta Redding by Shasta Regional Medical Center. Your life, your health, your choice.
News this hour from townhall.com. I'm Jason Walker. President Trump revoking security protection for several former government officials.
Even though they're out of government, former Secretary of State Mike Pompeo and former National Security Advisor John Bolton had security details because of credible and ongoing threats from Iran. And so did infectious disease expert Dr. Anthony Fauci. But those protections have been cut.
At some point, your security detail comes off. And, you know, you can't have them forever.
The president insists the moves are not retaliatory, but all three of those individuals have fallen out with Trump in recent years. Greg Clugston, Washington.
Also at townhall.com, House Speaker Mike Johnson says Republicans were very surprised by Joe Biden's pardoning of his family moments before he left office.
Pardoning his family for more than a decade of whatever activity, any nonviolent offenses, it was breathtaking to us. I don't think anything like that's ever been anticipated. And by the way, go look at the tape 4 years ago when it was just implied that President Trump might do something similar. They were apoplectic. Joe Biden himself, Adam Schiff, Chuck Schumer.
Democrats remain flustered in a constant state of denial and disagreement, and so far splintered in responding to President Trump's push against illegal immigration. He is sealing off the U.S.-Mexico border to illegals trying to enter and deporting millions of immigrants who do not have a legal status. On Capitol Hill, the Democrats are searching for a new message on border security and immigration, as polls continue to show broad support for tougher measures. South Korean prosecutors moving quickly against impeached President Yoon Suk-yeol on rebellion in connection with his martial law decree. His defense team, meanwhile, calls his indictment the worst decision. More on these stories at townhall.com.
Which varies by plan. Do you contract?
You hear the term living better. What do you think about? More money, a bigger house, maybe a yacht? What about how you feel physically? How do you wake up each day? How do you sleep during the night? What activities you can and cannot do? When you feel good, life is good. So if pain is affecting your life, see how Relief Factor can help. Relief Factor is a daily supplement that fights pain naturally, developed by doctors. It doesn't just mask pain temporarily. It helps reduce or even eliminate pain. How do I know? Absolutely, I'm a customer. I take Relief Factor daily. No lower back pain for me anymore. In fact, the longer you take it, the more effective it is. Give their 3-week quick start a try. It's only $19.95, less than a dollar a day. Just one phone call. 800-4-RELIEF. 800-4-RELIEF. Relief Factor. Relief wherever you're hurting. In 3 weeks or even days, Relief Factor can give you a chance to rediscover the true meaning of living better again. Visit ReliefFactor.com or call 800-4-RELIEF. That's 800-4-RELIEF for the one and only Relief Factor.
There is no question that fast food is a staple of American culture. However, some of its workers do struggle to survive because of very small paychecks in certain states. Correspondent Ron Taylor has more on the story.
About two-thirds of fast food workers are women, many supporting their families on those wages. The patchwork of minimum wage laws means income varies significantly based on local laws and cost of living. But fast food workers from across the country say those wages make it a struggle to survive. A growing number of states have pushed to increase their minimum wage in the face of record high inflation in recent years. California in April raised wages for fast food workers to $20 per hour. Contrast that to Texas, which is one of 20 states at the $7.25 federal minimum wage floor, and that rate has not budged since 2009. Ron Taylor reporting.
Breaking news and analysis at townhall.com. Today would have been the 100th birthday of Paul Newman.
It's still true of Newman's Own Foods. 100% of the profits from the sales are donated to charity. The Newman's Own Foundation is inviting other companies to follow their lead as part of the late actor's centenary. It's easier for them to do so after Congress passed the Philanthropic Enterprise Act in 2018 during President Trump's first term, as long as they follow the terms of the law. As of 2022, Newman's Own says it had given away $600 million to charities over the years with a focus on supporting children. George Williams reporting.
Authorities have recaptured the final four monkeys who escaped 2 months ago from a South Carolina compound that breeds them for medical research. The 43 monkeys had escaped from the Alpha Genesis facility through unlocked gates. More on these stories at townhall.com.
The views and opinions of shows on KCNR are those of the hosts, guests, and callers only, and do not necessarily reflect those of the staff, management, or advertisers of KCNR Radio.
Good afternoon. Welcome to the second hour of We the People Radio. My name is Aaron Ryan.
And my name is Bill Cundiff.
Hello, Willis.
Hello, Aaron.
So, I just wanted to say that we almost always do a free promotion, actually. We do free promotions for businesses we've intersected with during the week that are fantastic. And my vote goes to Budget Printing, but I have to look up their details. I will give them at the next break. But Budget Printing saved us during the election. They did a lot of good printing for us in a really, really speedy time frame and at very, very reasonable. They're not lying. You know, a lot of times it says Budget Printing, but it's not really budget. No, they are. They're on Bocelli Lane here in Reading, and they're terrific. I will give you their info at the next opportunity when I look them up. I forgot their business card. And probably need to shut our door there. It's kind of loud. So our next guest, we were chatting with AJ Rice in the first hour, and I never got to the part where he had done some work with South Africa. He listed all the same people that our guest this hour, Dr. Harry Booyens, has spoken about many, many times. And in his book, White Privilege, the White Privilege album, actually, why am I echoing myself? No, I'm only echoing myself to myself. Anyway, he did a terrific job with it. So Harry is an internationally recognized, multiple award-winning PhD defense and aerospace physicist, originally from South Africa with a 360-year bloodline in that country. Probably better update that, I suppose. We're into probably longer since we've been chatting with him for years and years. He lives with his family on the forested slopes outside of Vancouver, Canada. His life as a scientist exposed him to many of the realities of the Cold War and the period immediately following the fall of the Berlin Wall. It included interaction with the United States and British defense establishment. He applies his lifetime of research and interpretive skills to the history of genealogy, history and genealogy, and writes with factual accuracy and engaging style on these subjects. So he is all about the hard evidence, but we're going to chat politics today. He has a really interesting viewpoint because coming from South Africa, which for those of you who don't know, bottom line, what we learned from Harry is that if we would have lost the Revolutionary War, we would be South Africa right now. That was kind of the upshot of the whole thing. And now he lives in Canada where he has to deal with Justin Trudeau, who's kind of like Gavin Newsom, only worse.
Yeah.
Mostly worse, I think. Maybe. I don't know. All right, Harry. We can go wherever you'd like. We chatted for so long yesterday. It's like I was terrified. I thought, oh, my God, we talked for like 3 hours playing around on the stupid Skype to get it to work. And I told you, Bill will be our shill. He wasn't in the conversation, so he'll bring all the fresh information.
Well, Aaron, first of all, thank you very much for having me on your show. It's appreciated. Here's the second thing is congratulations to yourselves and your listenership, which I presume is slightly to the right of the general middle, or maybe it's now to the left of the new middle. I don't know. Anyway, the right thing has happened in the United States, and I have to confess that when it became clear that Donald Trump had won, I couldn't help crying with relief.
Hmm.
As a grown, old, grizzled, gray-haired guy, the emotion was a bit much. So I guess I want to express my thanks to the people of America for doing the right thing, finally. Winston Churchill once said that Americans can be counted on to do the right thing after first trying everything else.
Well, I have to say, I think we proved that point. After 4 years of Joe Biden and 8 years of Barack Obama, yeah.
And I guess I should explain why maybe I have some reason to be on your show. I mean, there's 330 million Americans to choose from. There may be more now. And there's probably like 35 million Canadians who generally would have a better general knowledge than me about the entire North America. So why pick this gray-haired, difficult South African guy who's now been living in Canada for 25 years?
Mm.
There's two reasons as far as I'm concerned. The one is, I've already lived the future that you were heading headlong into. You were sliding down that slope so fast it was leaving me breathless. I know what it took for it all to happen in South Africa, and you were going down that slope way faster. I don't know whether people have even the vaguest idea of the horror that you have spared yourselves in this election. I don't think people understand it. I don't think folks in the general West, in the Northern Hemisphere, and places like Australia where there's no really big challenges, I don't think they appreciate just how fragile our civilization is. I don't think they, in general, appreciate just how fortunate they are, and in particular, the people who hang to the left and who try to break everything that's useful all the time, they have no idea about these basic principles that they rely on to cause the havoc that they do. It's a horror to behold for someone like me who's had his country destroyed. And in several cases, it's the exact same characters. I mean, individual human beings who caused it. And they were doing it to you. So I will expand on that a little bit later. And so the one reason is, which I could sum up in the following phrase, is that I've already taken the bullet that you as a nation dodged in this election. I know how it ends. Number two is, I'm on here to, I was going to say, to beg anyone that has any influence to get on a telephone, get on, I don't know what medium, but get Trump to appoint Cash Patel, whatever you do. He has to be the boss of the FBI. For crying out loud, guys, you've got to get him there. And I woke up this morning to the news telling me that he's appointed Cash Patel.
It's like, funny because we talked about that yesterday.
Yeah, he had 330 million people to choose from, and honest to God, he chose the guy I wanted.
Isn't that okay? Funny?
And there's a reason, a very good reason, I wanted Cash Patel. And it's not just because he's already demonstrated that he can go after the deep state and all of that. That's not the only reason. So let me take this second one first. And that has to, the reason why I'm so anxious to see Cash Patel on this list is that his family, his parents, were escapees of tyranny in Africa. They escaped Idi Amin, tried to get out to Kenya, and then eventually ended up, I think, in Canada, actually, and then in the U.S. I'm on, under correction of that very last little step. And so that family knows in its DNA what this horror is that my folks are living in South Africa. And I know I can say that because I know three other people of Indian extraction here in Vancouver, in British Columbia, in Canada. I know three. And I get on with them like brothers and sisters because we don't even have to say anything. We understand one another about what this monster is that we've had to fight and lose against. And that you now dodged. So he has very good DNA calibration. I can count on him. You know, if you wake him up in the middle of the night, his reflexes are going to be in the right direction. That's why I wanted that man there. Okay, and he needs to be backed up, and he needs to be given enough freedom to take apart this machine that's been coming after everybody. Now, there is a, well, maybe I should shut up for a minute, and this is your show.
No, we invite you on so you can tell us stories. Come on, well, Dr. Harry, tell us a story.
Okay.
Now, we like your vantage point is unique. There are not, I guess I haven't gone on some exhaustive search, but I don't know people who have studied the politics of South Africa and the rest of the world, and then applied kind of an American lens to it. It's a really unique perspective that you have, and I think you've always been a really, you've always been a cautionary tale.
Yeah, I'm kind of this grizzled old gray guy standing on the horizon, taking his meds and waving his arms and screaming at everybody, "Wake up, please! For God's sakes, wake up!"
Well, they were calling you a racist long before they were calling us all racist. That's a relatively new, kind of a new thing for us. I remember you telling us about the cruise ship guy.
Yes.
tell us about the cruise ship guy again for those people who maybe haven't met you before.
Well, there's a couple of things like that. So maybe for the first, there's sort of a couple of spots in my life that served as a calibration point. And the first thing to mention, maybe by way of just, folks who haven't met me on your show before, yes, I was indeed born in South Africa. I was born way back in 1953 as they were shutting down the Korean War. And for those who don't know, even before I was born, Mandela's party had sent people to China to go and look for military help. Now, life moved on. And round about when I was homing in on being 4 years old, my mother hoisted me on her arm, and she did the weirdest thing. She walked me across the road to the grassy knoll. Yes, we had grassy knolls there as well. She walked me to the grassy knoll. There was no hidden guy with a gun there. But she pointed up at the stars, and she showed me a moving star. And that was so cool that I decided on that moment that I was not going to be a farmer like my grandfather, nor was I going to be a railway engineer like my father said I should one day be. I wanted to be one of the men who put that stuff up there. So my mother said it's a scientist who put it up there. It wasn't 100% correct, but that was close enough, so I was going to be a scientist. Meanwhile, I was watching F-86 Sabres flying around in our skies because the South African Air Force used F-86s built by Canadair in Canada, having helped the U.S. in Korea, where, for what it's worth, the U.S. Air Force always played the first few bars of the South African anthem at Air Force events by way of thanks for South Africa's help in the Korean air effort. Anyway, things moved on, and Harry got a little bit older, and he discovered in 1960, or just before that really, my mother worked at a magazine distribution company, and what they didn't sell in the particular week for an edition of this paper, she would at the end of the week bring back home. So I was plied with magazines, books, journals, you name it. There was never a shortage of reading material. Of course it included some Superman comics and Batman. I knew all the superheroes. But it included things like Time Magazine, Life, later Newsweek, etc. And so that when Gary Powers got shot down in 1960, I was completely on top of it. I knew about the arsenic pill that he didn't take, all that stuff. I knew about him being swapped out. I knew about the trial, all of that stuff. When 1962 came around, I had enough brains and background to understand what a nuclear war meant, so that when the missile crisis happened, I was terrified out of my skull, because I had already seen pictures of what people looked like that had been irradiated during Hiroshima and Nagasaki. So in a certain sense, I was, what's the word? Not overeducated. I was over-informationalized, if there's such a word.
Yeah, you were exposed to things that
I was,
most kids wouldn't. You know, Harry, hold on for 5 seconds. We've got to take a really quick break, and then we will come back. Our guest is Harry Booyans. You are listening to We the People, and you can find us at wethepeopleradio.us.
At Greg's Pump and Well Service, we believe integrity is the cornerstone of everything we do. This month, we proudly salute our armed forces and first responders, those who embody true service, dedication, and integrity. When you choose us for your pump and well needs, you're choosing a company that shares those same values. Thank you for your service. Let us serve you with pride. 530-282-5395. Call us at 530-282-5395, license 109-0355.
Happy New Year, Reading, from your friends at Black Bear Diner, reminding you that if you're looking for more food, more fun, and more family, this is the place to be. You can count on a warm atmosphere and deliciously fresh home-style food. It's the perfect spot for every generation, with something for everyone. Come for breakfast, lunch, or dinner. Black Bear Diner, 2605 Hilltop Drive, Reading.
Black Bear Diner.
At Cornerstone Community Bank, you're more than just a customer. You're our friends, neighbors, the local businesses where we shop, and the restaurants where we dine. Your success strengthens our community. Come meet our amazing teams in Reading, Red Bluff, and our newest location in Anderson, and find out why we are more than banking. Cornerstone Community Bank. Member FDIC and Equal Housing Lender.
Every day, your life is filled with choices. And when a health crisis happens, you need to be prepared to choose the best healthcare partner. That's when Shasta Regional Medical Center is there to answer the call above the rest. Ranked best in Reading and in the nation for patient safety and clinical excellence, you can be confident that when you choose Shasta, you are choosing superior care, safety, and excellence for you and your family. Choose Shasta at ShastaRegional.com.
I find it kind of sad
circles. It's kind of a mad world. Hmm. Yeah, running in circles is never good. Hey, you know, just for reference, at wethepeopleradio.us, we do have a tab up top labeled South Africa. It has shows that go back to 2018. May of 2018, that was when we first met Dr. Harry Boeyens, and he spoke about the history of the Dutch. I think you will be fascinated by the history in South Africa and how that parallels U.S. history. He's really done an excellent job of lining that out for us over the years, really. Been doing this a long time with him. I think you'll like it, and it's really worth listening. All of our archives, by the way, are commercial free. They are MP3 files. They're free to listen to. They're not copyrighted in any way. You can download them, share them, do whatever you like. We make them available as a learning tool. And if you have people that you think would be interesting to have on the show, get a hold of us. All of our information is on there at wethepeopleradio.us. All right, back to you, Dr. Boeyens.
Okay, so by way of calibration points, so maybe I should just mention that in 1963, my mother was a huge fan of Jackie Kennedy, and she followed her for all sort of matters, fashion and all that kind of stuff, and of course I was listening to Kennedy and all that. So I want folks to know that I grew up with that Life magazine front cover of John saluting his father's casket.
Oh, yeah.
That was on my wall. Okay, in sunny old South Africa. There was nothing between me and the South Pole except the Russian Navy. Okay? And like every regular kid, I was part of a little kiddie gang when I was about 10. And, of course, they made me the scientist of the team and all that kind of stuff. I started building crystal radio sets and stuff like that. And so I started picking up strange things on that set. And then I thought, forget the crystal set, get some better stuff in there. And then I realized I was listening to Voice of America, Radio Moscow, BBC, Deutsche Welle, and Radio Peking.
Fairly eclectic mix.
Yes. Well, that's what you get on shortwave if you're in Africa.
Okay,
so they were all trying to talk to us in some way or another. Well, I must say, even at the tender age of around 12, I realized that if it's Radio Peking, if we had to fight those people, we'd probably have to shoot our own families if we lose. It's just that the concept of being under that civilization is unthinkable. So with that, I finished off high school. I did my compulsory military training, which I damn near didn't survive, and got to university, finished off my degrees and things, and then when I got to do my master's degree in about 1976, 77, sorry, the promoter for my degree was an American chap. His name was George. I won't mention his name because I don't have clearance from him. But George was what you would today call a blue dog Democrat, a true Union guy. His dad had been saved by the Union. His wife would later be saved by the Union. So he was a strong Union Democrat. And it was George who introduced me to the concepts and things behind the United States. It was he who was responsible for my personal love affair with the preamble to the Declaration of Independence. And I put it to both of you and anyone listening that I think the two primary documents for Western civilization, That list does not really include the Magna Carta. What it includes is the preamble to the Declaration of Independence and the Bible. That's far more simple to understand. So so much for the Brits. I'm not impressed on that. Okay, but I do have to tell you that I discovered later that preamble is almost verbatim from the Dutch in Holland in the late 1500s when they went up against the Spaniards and they wanted to be independent. So your guys did have access to something to help them write that, okay? It's almost a verbatim translation of the Dutch from like a 200 years earlier. Now, so when I finished my degrees various, I went to the United States. I ended up at IBM at Yorktown Heights in New York, which is now AOC territory of all places. And there I had to share an office with a Danish professor of engineering. He was my senior by an easy 10 years. So I was a bright and, you know, bright-eyed and bushy-tailed young physicist, PhD, coming to do a post-grad thing at IBM. And he would ask me about South Africa. I'd talk about it. And one day he came at me again and I told him, Aaron, what is it you expect us to do? We're outnumbered 9-1. The whole damn world is against it. No one is helping us with anything. We're all on our own. Okay? What do you want? What do you expect us to do? And he rose from his seat and he stood up in front of my desk, and he was like a 6'6" or 6'7" guy, long, tall, Viking type guy. All he still needed was the helmet with the horns. He glowered at me and he basically spat the following line at me. You are a sick anachronism. You are a blot on the name of Europe. You should just die.
Wow.
Wow. Very subtle.
He turned on his heels and he walked out the door. Now, he was a classic Northern European communist, what some people these days would like to call a socialist. He wasn't. He actually walked into his own church and he renounced it in front of the whole assembly there. So a devout communist by principle. not by birth, by principle. Okay? So you can imagine what the conversations between us looked like, because he was making comments about dock workers, and I said to him, I'll tell you what, I'll drive, I'll put you in the car. We both go down together to the dock workers down in New York on the harbor, and I'll tell them my picture, and you tell them yours. We'll see who they agree with. And that's when he said something remarkable that is now resounding all over the world. He said, well, of course they'll agree with you. They're stupid. Does that sound familiar? Does that sound like deplorables?
Wow. And, garbage.
Yeah.
Garbage Republicans.
That was said to me by a communist professor in 1979.
Wow.
So that's a calibration point. That's a serious calibration point. Because that says so infinitely much more about him than about me. That even at that stage, it kind of stopped me dead in my tracks, and it told me there is some seriously bad stuff on this planet that I was not calibrated for. So, you know, that happened. We eventually went back to South Africa, and I worked in R&D, developing all kinds of stuff, things that go bump in the night in some cases. I have heard from some Russians how the stuff worked that I had helped to create. They were mightily impressed. And so I got some awards for that field. And life went on. And then eventually Mandela became the president of the country. And things became utterly impossible over the next 5 years. So that by the year 2000, I was ready to pack up. My family was ready to move. And we had applied to move to Canada. So I went to a meeting where there was the strangest creature present, and he was, they call it cadre deployment. It means a political officer is put in your workplace. Okay? Imagine a country where the Democratic Party has complete control and they are putting political officers in your workplace. That's what we're talking about.
We kind of had Americans that. We had a glimpse of their dream of that over the past 4 years. Terrifying.
You need to understand they will do that. You were on the slope to go where I already was. That's why I'm saying I took that bullet for you guys. You don't have to take it anymore. I'm not in President Trump's league. I can just speak with the authority of somebody who has lived this horror. So we had a meeting, and this one of these guys turns up, and he makes a speech about, you know, how my one colleague doesn't have to worry. He'll protect her. I don't know what the hell else. And she told him to get lost in front of everybody else. I thought she was great. She eventually left the country as well. She's living 5 miles away. when that happened, I raised my voice and I told our director, who is a coward, and I told him, I think we should take a coffee break right now. Okay, so coffee break. And I walk out the door and four of my colleagues come with me. Two of them were black ladies. One was a colored gentleman. Now, colored in South Africa means something different from in the U.S., so don't get all excited. And the fourth one was a South African Indian who had been overseas in exile and had come back. And he was a member of Mandela's party. Okay, formally registered member. But I'd done quite a bit of work with him. So I and those four are standing there when this cadre-deployed political officer turns up. And he starts talking to me. I start talking to him. And I told him, why don't you just get rid of our company president? You have completely broken him already. He's, you know, why are you guys messing around like this? And his comment to me in front of those were, you don't understand, Harry. We're trying to get rid of all people like you.
Wow.
Okay. So if you ever want to know what a government plans for you, it's very clear when one of its sent messengers looks you in the eye in front of witnesses of four racial groups around him, and he says, you don't get it, Harry. We're trying to get rid of all people like you. Okay? I wish you could have seen the faces of my colleagues. I resigned some weeks later and left the country. But before I could leave, the Indian guy came to my office and he said, Harry, I'd just like to thank you for the way that you have helped me and the way you've worked with me. I have learned to respect you. I want you to know that I wasn't white enough for the previous government, and it's vividly clear I'm not black enough for the present one. If you are interested, I will give you the contact information for all my contacts who helped me internationally. Okay, that coming from a member of Mandela's own party. So that was a calibration point. Anyway, now I've used up a lot of your time and there's not awfully much left. So I would, if you'll allow me, I'd like to get off this calibration point thing.
Sure.
All of which.
Let's do ourselves a favor. How about this? Before we reset, let's take a really quick break and then come back with you to the top of the hour.
Sure.
All righty. Our guest is Dr. Harry Bouyans. You're listening to We the People, and you can find us at wethepeopleradio.us. You're fired, Bill. It took too long.
Oh, sorry.
Jones's Fort Gun Shop, serving Shasta County for over 50 years. It's a new year and we're very excited about the new leadership for our nation. Jones's Fort is offering the brand new Ruger LCP Max 380 at only $349 and the new Ruger Max 9 at just $395. Jones's Fort, serving all your firearm needs since 1962. You can find us at 1600 East Cypress Avenue or just give us a call, 530-222-3223.
Hi friends, RC here with Tobacco and Brew, bringing you this month's Cigar of the Humidor, Monte Cristo Classic Number 2. This Figueroa has been described as one of the world's great cigars, a silky Connecticut shade wrapper in combination with the best Dominican tobaccos form this perfectly constructed cigar. The smooth aroma of toasted almonds, vanilla, coffee, and spice round out this classic stick. Get yours today at Tobacco and Brew, Redding, California.
Hi, I'm Steve Coburn, proud owner of Country Air Pet Resort here in Redding. I invite you to come and take a tour of my revitalized pet resort. Our goal here at Country Air is to make sure your pet can relax and have a healthy, happy time away from home. With friendly, caring people, lots of fresh air and exercise, good healthy food, and plenty of pampering. There are no small cages here. What we offer are large temperature-controlled runs and spacious exercise yards that are great for fun and socialization. We even offer daycare. Cats are treated to a two-room apartment plus playtime in our playroom. So stop by and take a tour of the best. You and your pet will want to come back to Country Air Pet Resort, where our motto is, we treat your pets as if they were our own. Country Air Pet Resort, 549-3335.
Harry in school. Hey, I found a McDonald's budget printing, by the way. I almost forgot. I'm so bad at that. McDonald's budget printing is at 2647 Bocelli Lane in Redding, California. Phone number is 530-222-0322. You should look them up. They do a great job. There's my free advertising of the week.
Good job, Aaron.
Because I like them. They're very nice. Back to our guest, Dr. Harry Booyans, who is now not recalibrating. Are we done calibrating?
Yeah,
what did you say we're done doing?
We're done calibrating. Now you know who's been talking over here and why I figured I may just have a license to speak.
Nice.
I probably should just say that, I've had awards from the defense industry and from scientific bodies and stuff like that. That's all cool, and I appreciate that, and it's here in the house. But the nicest thing said to me upon my departure from South Africa was from a young Venda engineer. The Venda are a small tribe in the north of South Africa. This man came up to me, and he's a lay preacher in his own community. And he looked me in the eye and he said to me, Harry, I have not worked with you for a very long time yet, but I do want to tell you that for a man like you, my people will slaughter an ox. So,
now there's some high praise.
That's quite an honor.
So I'm the guy for whom they wanted to slaughter an ox.
So if they're going to slaughter a ground squirrel, there's a magnitude of appreciation. Ox is good.
It's a big deal for those folks. Okay.
That's cute.
An ox is their medium of trade, so it's a big deal.
Sure.
So I always contrasted that with the Danish professor, you know, like,
yeah,
he's all upset about what he thought we were doing to black people in South Africa, and here is a young black man, and this is what he is saying to me. So there's a little bit of a disconnect here somewhere in between. Okay, so I would like to get onto the subject of why am I so intense about Kash Patel being in this new job. The president, I think, can appoint something like, or at least nominate something like 4,000 positions. I think something like 1,200 have to be confirmed by the Senate. And I guess head of the FBI has to be confirmed, I would imagine. Now, beyond Kash Patel being a guy like me who's ancestry is ex-Africa and not wanted there, as you heard very vividly. There's also something else. One of the jobs that he will have to do is something that you may have heard Matt Gaetz refer to. There is a clip hanging around the internet of Matt Gaetz saying, we have to investigate NewsGuard. There is a reason why I believe Kash Patel needs to focus down on NewsGuard very, very quickly. And I have to give you and your listeners the background on that. In the early 90s, Nelson Mandela was sold to the United States, and they bought him lock, stock, and barrel as an angel of peace and mercy and all matters good. The main thing for that was a book that was supposed to be an autobiography, but there was really a ghostwriter for that. The ghostwriter was a guy by the name of Richard Stengel. Richard Stengel worked for Time magazine. And he married a South African lady, had kids there, and in fact, his eldest had Mandela as godfather. So please understand how close this relationship is.
Yeah.
Okay? Make no mistakes about these things. Richard Stengel returned to Time magazine after getting the book published, but what nobody realized at the time, that it only came out much later, he had removed all references to the fact that Mandela was part of the leadership of the South African Communist Party. He'd removed all of that. He had sterilized the book so that there's no connection there. In fact, there's a little page where it's almost turned into a mockery, where he kind of pretends Mandela's laughing about the white South Africans being worried about him being a communist when nothing's further from the truth. The day that Mandela died, the South African Communist Party rushed to the microphones to announce that he had always been at the heart of the leadership of the party. Richard Stengel, as ghostwriter, knew very well that if he included that truth in the book, it would have sold like a lead balloon in the United States. He knew that. I knew that. You all know that. So was produced your Angel of Peace. And I know a lot of Americans hear me say this, and they just cannot bring themselves to believe this. So my comment to you is, your brains have been done in by Richard Stengel, ever since the early 90s. So where is he now? Well, I'd like you to know that Obama appointed him as his propaganda chief. Not my words, those were Richard Stengel's own words. His own words. He said, I was appointed as Obama's propaganda chief. And then he adds, he said, by the way, I believe government propaganda is a good thing. Okay?
By the way.
Yeah. Okay, so you can hear this guy speak. You can look him up on Google and YouTube, and you can see that. So, he created, apparently he says he got a phone call from Hillary one night to say, you got to get going on this thing. We've got to counter all these Russian bots and things. So she got this Russian bot thing on the brain for quite a while. Because she's always referring to it. Like she's heard a phrase, Russian bot. So if it's pink and wobble, she calls it a Russian bot. it just irritates me. So.
And they're from Moldova, usually.
And he created a thing called the Global Engagement Center. Did you guys know that you've got a Global Engagement Center? It's part, I think, of the State Department.
Isn't that great?
It's to engage the globe.
Huh.
Of course, it's not
what could go wrong?
It's not your propaganda department.
No.
Here's Harry, you know, he's the kid who listened to Voice of America without realizing he was listening to the CIA, right? Back then. So, please, man, I'm gray and old and full of it, and I've been around. I have dealt with, met with the CIA. I have met the KGB. I have met the South African security people. I have not met CSIS here in Canada yet. So I've run into this world of these things, and each of those is a story in its own right. But so he created the Global Engagement Center, and then they decided that they really have to do something about countering all this horrible untruths about ivermectin and about how Russia was wrong, and anything that anybody on the right of the spectrum says is obviously per definition wrong, evil, and must be countered. I'm being sarcastic.
It's true, and interestingly enough, I mean, it almost became a stamp of approval. Depending on who said it, like, it's kind of funny. I just happened to pop into, I was looking for something with Richard Stengel to add to the page for today just a second ago. And lo and behold, on MSNBC, John Bolton, obviously a bastion of conservative thought, compares Kash Patel to Stalin's right hand man after Trump's FBI nomination. That's the headline.
Why do you think that collection of classic central neocons are so? I mean, my calibration on the neocons comes from 1998, when I read their their memorandum of what they aim to do for the future. It was called a Project for a New American Century, and it had all the right names. Okay, Cheney was there, Wolfowitz was there. Ahmed Chalabi was there. Kagan was there. They were all there, and they were making it quite clear that the U.S. has won the Cold War, now it must establish world hegemony. How those guys got married with the Democrats, Lord in heaven can only understand, because I don't.
Yeah.
Somehow they figured, get Liz Cheney and she's going to save their party. So my point is this. If you now go and look at what did they do, the thing they established to control the media is a thing called NewsGuard. You may in fact have it on your mobile phone. You better check whether you've got NewsGuard. Because NewsGuard monitors for you whether the news is correct or not correct. It gives it brownie points and evil points and Pinocchio points, all kinds of cool things. And, of course, companies will then deal with NewsGuard behind the scenes to make sure that they cool with NewsGuard and get a 100% correctness score. Guess what happens? If you're on the left, you get 100%. If you're on the right, you can't get past 40. So who is really on top of this thing? There's two innocent idiots. One is called Stephen Brill. The other one is Gordon Krovitz. They supposedly are the founders. That's not where you should look. You should look at the list of so-called advisors. I notice that they are not being called board members. I have a running battle here with Microsoft Copilot about that.
you and Microsoft Copilot, just for people who want to enjoy that, I actually did pull that across from the last show we did with you. So, let's see, I should have said this all along, but it's December 1st, 2024 when we're airing this, in case we do this again on a different day, but I did pull across your you know, using propaganda against Americans, where you asked Copilot and transcribed what they told you. I did put that on here, and it has all the links to Richard Stengel for those people who don't know what that is, and for all these, you know, there's always way more on NewsGuard than any of us will have time to go through. But I would like to do a show just about that one time if we could.
So here's the point. You remember the letter with the 51 leaders of the security field and all that, and how
they all
said it was
a Russian whatever. Yeah.
Russia. Okay. Anybody here remember General Michael Hayden?
I don't think so.
Ex-chief of CIA, ex-chief of NSA. Okay. Anders Rasmussen, Secretary General of NATO. And the Honorable Richard Stengel that I just mentioned, founder of the Global Engagement Center and author of Mandela's book, Obama's Propaganda Chief. And wait for it, for all of you who have ever tried to add something to Wikipedia, Jimmy Wales, the founder of Wikipedia. Those are the advisors to NewsGuard. You're being messed up by the head, folks.
Yeah.
Okay? So, please understand what NewsGuard is. It is a monitoring system that slowly bleeds the right to death by affecting the advertisers, affecting the channels that people talk on, etc., etc. So NewsGuard is a machine created by an Obama appointment who's very proud of that role. Okay? And his calibration is Nelson Mandela, for whom he BS'd the American population. And he's so into Mandela that Mandela was his eldest son's godfather. You guys think South Africa is not connected to the U.S. by the umbilical? You're going to have to drink cold water and think again.
Yeah.
This is why I sit here as a grizzled old 71-year-old ex-South African guy, and I'm telling you, you have no idea what you just dodged. And I'm telling you, you better back up Kash Patel while he takes these guys down.
Absolutely. What a great way to end. We've got to take a really quick exit here. Stage left. Our guest has been Dr. Harry Bouyans. Thank you so much for listening. You've been listening to We the People Radio. .us. We'll be back at you next week.
The adventures that settled this land. Let the world fall tyranny. Touch the stars from liberty. Let's do that again.
Center. The news from Town Hall is brought to you on KCNR Shasta Reading by Shasta Regional Medical Center. Your life, your health, your choice.